Welcome to another episode of Connecting with the Toms. I'm Julie, your trauma-informed movement coach.
I'm Dr. Tom, your number one biological medicine doctor.
And we're here to offer you some hope, help, and proactive health tips without a prescription. If this is your first time listening, my dad and I like to have a conversation about how we can help you heal using proactive, helpful things to help you heal your body from the inside out. So, Dad, today we're going to dive into the world of climate change and the effects of your health. So, do you want to get us started and talk about all the wonderful things that you get to experience because of climate change? Because you live in Phoenix, Arizona. It's a little bit hot there, yeah?
It's a little bit hot. So, just as a starting point, please don't have the impression that we are experts in climate change, that we know what's going on, we know what's going to happen. All we're going to hopefully bring to mind and some aha moments perhaps to our listeners about types of things that, you know, is it having an impact? Is it another one of the thousand pieces of the puzzle that truly has an impact on our life on a day-to-day basis? And I think more and more people certainly are acknowledging that climate change is here. It's real. Although it's hard to believe that there still may be skeptics thinking that it's not happening, but almost anywhere you look, anything you hear about, it is a reality. And so, yeah, I do live in Phoenix, and it has been a little warm the last 3 weeks. In fact, this is a record-setting day again for a temperature over 110 degrees. Yesterday was 118 degrees. Almost every day now, we're setting record high temperatures, but it's not just about heat. We can look at that in Arizona, but if you look in the Northeast, they're having record amounts of rain. We looked a few weeks ago in Texas, the number of tornadoes that have happened. We look at the amount of rainfall a few weeks ago in New York State, and they're calling, used to be 50-year, the 100-year, the 500-year. The episode that happened in New York State a few weeks ago was called Once in a Thousand Years. It's like, but these once in a thousand years are now going to be every year. People are starting to realize that heat that we have in Arizona, or the record temperatures that are being set in Death Valley, hottest temperatures ever recorded in the United States. Just a couple of weeks ago, there were three consecutive days, and there may be more than that, but I haven't heard it. But there are three consecutive days that became the hottest days ever recorded on the earth in general. And so, you know, these will just keep popping up. We'll be setting new records on an ongoing basis for what's going on. So I would doubt that our listeners are skeptics. I would doubt our listeners are not part of the group of people who believe that climate change is not real, that there's not things that hopefully that, you know, they can be doing and have to do for themselves in order to cope for themselves. You know, one of the more immediate things that's sort of changed are my day-to-day routine, and not just me, but people who live here, is that because it's easily 115 degrees, which is, I think, something like 48 degrees Celsius, even 50 degrees Celsius, which was interesting because yesterday I got an email from a colleague who lives in Newfoundland, and it was 26 degrees Celsius, and said, "We have a heat advisory." And I sent back a post that says, "Well, it's 48 degrees, right? 48 degrees Celsius in Arizona. And we have a heat advisory also." So, you know, just a little bit of a different perspective of where you live, part of the world that you're in, that it's 26 degrees, something like 80 degrees. 80 degrees for us is like, oh, that's heaven because it's so cool. So everything is relative. So whether it's too much rain, too much cold, too much heat, too much dry, because the other side of the coin in Arizona is it hasn't rained here for since something like March the 10th or March the 12th. So we're 120 days or something already with no rain. And the last time it rained, it was 1/10 of an inch, which is hardly much rainfall, but it was recorded. So they're saying that's our last recorded rainfall. So I live in the desert, and yeah, it's supposed to be dry. But then there was a little article yesterday, you know, at the Desert Botanical Gardens. And even there, we're well cared for. The cactuses are dying. And the person said, gosh, if the cactus can't survive this heat, what are humans about to do? How are humans going to survive the heat? The cactus, which have been on here and evolved to be able to withstand long, long periods of no rain, long, long periods of excessive heat. And it showed a number of the cactus actually in the gardens. He said, I don't think that these are going to survive. And they're, you know, they're huge with all kinds of arms. He guesstimated they're 80 to 100 years of age. They've been around. And in the last year, with this, the changes that have happened, he says, we're losing some of our prized large cactus in the garden. So everywhere we hear about it, we hear about how we're damaging the planet with this broadcast. We're obviously speaking to the converted. We don't need to be trying to convince you that that is an issue. But I think what is important is that we start to think about what kind of changes are we going to have to make? And what kind of changes do you make on an everyday basis in order to, you know, cope with what's coming, or what's here, and which will only become more and more of a reality? Unfortunately, in the Arizona desert, I don't remember the number, but unfortunately, people are dying in this part of the world because of heat exhaustion. People obviously cannot live outside. Our nighttime temperature, which I think is the 10th or 11th day in a row, was something like Fahrenheit was in the 90, I think it was 98 this morning. That was the low temperature overnight. And so this is like the 10th day in a row. It hasn't gone below 90. I don't know what 90 Celsius is, but let's say it's probably like 32 or something. So imagine your day. So in many parts, 32 degrees Celsius, oh my God, it's so hot. And that doesn't even go below that because if we're going up to 48 degrees, you can understand Celsius, you can understand that. So how has it changed my life just in every day aspect? The two most obvious, so I've said previously, today was the 421st day that I have moved my body walking, which is an activity I've been doing, like I said. But unfortunately, come December, I could walk at 8 or 10 or noon or 1 o'clock, wouldn't matter. But now I'm walking between 5 and 5:15. So I'm actually home by 6 o'clock or 6:15 because it's already 100 degrees almost. The other thing that unfortunately has not happened, and it's not just me, but obviously walking our dogs is a very important component. We can't walk our dogs because the pavement is too hot. It burns the paws within 3 to 5 minutes just walking on pavement so we can get to the park. That's significant. Obviously, it affects their health. They can't be outside. In fact, they well know. They literally go outside, do their business, and come back inside because it's just, I mean, yes, they become climatized just like us humans are when we live in this part of the world for what's going on. When you live in this part of the world, you need an automatic car starter. So we don't start it in the wintertime early. We start it in the summertime because inside the car, they did a measurement the other day, car sitting outside, and the steering wheel was 165 degrees. And so my joke is, when I go to drive, I put my oven mitts on because I can't touch the steering wheel. People in other parts put their mitts, their gloves on in the wintertime because it's too cold. I put them on in the summertime because you can't literally turn the steering wheel because you're going to burn your hand. It's so hot. And I drive a truck and have for 19 years the same one. And if I have to put something in the back, I need a glove because I can't touch the metal to open the tailgate of the truck because it's simply too hot. So, you know, it's those types of things you say, oh, that's me. If you don't live here, you likely don't appreciate it. I have an unbelievable empathy. I don't know how they do it, how people, landscapers, which is a huge business here in this part of the world, literally at the crack of dawn, we're talking 4:45 in the morning, 5 o'clock, it's already light enough. And so because they have to be done by 1 or 2, you literally, you know, how could you possibly be working outside at 3 to 4, 5 p.m., which is sort of the height of the temperature? And the other thing that is the issue here is that nothing cools down. As I said, the temperature is always really, really warm. And so the pavement doesn't cool down. They're experimenting with something here in Phoenix to try and paint some type of a surface on the road so it keeps cooler. It's an experimental stage, but obviously there's a huge awareness to this type of thing on an everyday basis. So I'll stop there. I have a few other thoughts, but I'll let Julie add any comments to the part of the world that she lives in that may be not suffering heat, but having some other issues. And one that is a big one is about bugs.
Yeah, bugs and air quality, because we've had fires, lots and lots of fires. And so we've had a lot of smoke advisory and like my kids' soccer practices or, you know, sports practices outside have been canceled because the air quality is so bad. It just, the world is changing. We can't deny that. And we have to make some adjustments. And it's crazy because we all know that being outside is such a key component to our pineal gland. So we need to get the, you know, sunlight into our eyes and, you know, understanding that movement is such a key component. And it's like, you know, like it's like we're being forced to stay inside now. And we know during the pandemic what that did to our health. And now it's like, it's not the government deciding, it's Mother Nature saying, hey, I'm still the boss. And yeah, we have to make some adjustments, right? So there's a lot of adjustments that need to be done at the end of the day. And so this part, like we talk about health, and that's our you know, that's our shtick and that's our thing. So with the changes, we can't deny it. So what can you do now to start? What are some changes that you can do to impact that will impact your health, right? So for me with the air quality, a lot of people reached out. They're like, what can I do to help myself? Especially if you had any kind of asthma, which we know if you take read my dad's book or take his seminar, you'll know that asthma, it's a trauma thing. At the end of the day, it's a thing. It's a trauma response, something that develops in childhood because some organs didn't develop properly and whatnot. But at the end of the day, it's like, what can I do now to help me with my lungs and the air quality? So I'm like, have you listened to my nebulizing podcast? And if not, go check it out. And that's a key piece that we can do. That's something right there that you can do. And somebody actually just listened to it and messaged me. And she's like, what are some things that I can put in the cup? And I mean, that those are some things that we can start doing for our health. But Dad, it's kind of, this is your wheelhouse, like in terms of what can we start doing? What are some proactive things that we can do? Recognizing that Mother Nature is shifting. Things are different. Yes, there are bigger bugs. Like ticks are huge here. My kids go to camp and lots and lots and lots of tick bites here. So I'm like, I'd basically douse my kids in tea tree and we're driving to camp yesterday. I'm like, holy, open the window. We're like, it's like a punch in the face because all of them are doused in tea tree oil. But you know, we're doing our thing. You know, that's how we're taking it. Like I make my own bug spray. And so like I'm taking my power back. But there are realities that there are more bugs here. Their air quality isn't as good. And El Nina is what the weather people are talking about here. Cause our temperature is much warmer. It's funny. Cause I'm like, I show my kids, like you said, like, you know, it's only 26 degrees here in Canada. And then I show them like where grandma and grandpa are. And they're like, oh my God, imagine. Cause we went, for us, it was like the hottest day. It was like 32 degrees. And I'm like, oh my God, what am I going to do? I took my kids to the water park. And that's how we try to, I don't have a pool. We went to a water park and I'm like, can you imagine being like 15 degrees hotter than this? And they're like, no. And that's hard to realize that you're legit living in an oven. And we have a little taste of it because of El Nino this year, but things are different. Things are changing. So what can we do now? What are some things that we can do? And I'm assuming you're going to go right into do the basic treatment guidelines. So listen to all the 28 podcasts that we've done, but what are some things that people can do now knowing that Mother Nature is impacting how they move a little bit more now than before?
Yeah, basic treatment guidelines become obvious, but just to emphasize the point where that you talked about air quality and the aspect of air quality is not just a function of the fires, the Canadian fires that you know that are obviously affecting a lot of people in the United States and have with some of the air quality in New York City in the past and Minneapolis recently and Philadelphia recently. So, but don't expect that the air quality is going to change dramatically. You know, next year, I suspect in Canada, these fires are not going to go out until the wintertime and it actually starts to snow again. Because, you know, there is the reality. So, you know, the other thing, what is the lung of the earth? The lung of the earth are trees. And there was just an announcement that I saw yesterday that I'm not sure which group it is, but some group of government are committing to plant 3 trillion trees, because we know that one of the ways that the air is being purified is by our vegetation. Photosynthesis takes in CO2, gives off O2. So we want to, we can't decrease the 21% of oxygen that's in the air in the room that you're breathing in general. So we have the aspects of breathing as one of the most critical components that how we're going to cope with poor air quality at this point in time. And so just an observation, I know we've talked about this, and I have to admit that I don't remember if we talked about it, but if it is, you're going to hear it again, and hopefully you'll remember it.
They have to hear it 7 times, Dad, so just go. It's all good.
Yeah. So in 1900, the average person only did 6 to 8 breaths a minute. 6 to 8 breaths. It's like, oh, that's like you only took a breath every 10 to 12 seconds. Mm-hmm. Which we did talk about as an important aspect of things. Now, the average person takes between 16 and 20 breaths a minute. And we say, well, what happened? Like, how in 125 years why are we breathing so much more frequently? Is it because there's not 20, they had more oxygen in the air? No, it's not it. It's because our brains have desensitized to the reason that we really are breathing. And when I ask people that question, I say, why do you think you breathe? And they say, well, I get oxygen. And I say, well, do you know how much oxygen is in your body right now? I don't know. It's like, by breathing 16 times a minute, I guess, 10, 12 seconds. No, if anybody's taking a CPR course in the last few years, you now know that rescue breathing is not sort of the standard component of doing CPR. Because now it's about compressions, because we know that you have about 8 minutes of oxygen in your body. And if you can keep the oxygen, the blood circulating by compressing the heart, you can keep your brain alive until paramedics arrive or some other type of, you do need to do rescue breathing. So if we have 8 minutes of oxygen in our body, why, and our heart is beating because we haven't had a heart attack or passed out or something, why are we breathing, you know, every 3 or 4 or 6 seconds? It's because of what we call carbon dioxide tolerance or threshold for what's going on. So one of the most important things on an ongoing basis of how we're going to continuing to cope with this poor air quality is going to be retraining our brain that we do not need to breathe so often. So a very simple method of breathing is what we're going to call box breathing, which means you breathe in through your nose to a count of 4. You hold for a count of 4. You breathe out to a count of 4. And then you don't breathe for a count of 4. So 4, 4, 4, 4. And so the idea then is to do 6 cycles of that type of breathing. And yoga and Qigong and Tai Chi and all that, of course, breathing has been a huge part of that. But I think more than ever, not just because breathing is relaxing, it's parasympathetic, it makes you slow down. Now, because of climate change, this is the type of thing that learning to unconsciously breathe less frequently by increasing your brain's threshold as far as carbon dioxide is concerned will allow you to obviously have, even in times of poor air quality, which obviously still needs some type of filtration. You know, you can't be in a smoky room and keep breathing it. But if you can train your brain that you don't need to be breathing as much as 16 to 20 times a minute, and constantly are retaking that in, but you're actually only breathing six times a minute, and then both in and getting the waste product out, that by itself will enhance lung quality, which is, you know, the thing that you just ultimately brought up.
And can I just add that breathing through your nose is critical when we're doing this, because your nose is how you filter. So not your mouth. Your mouth is not a filter. Your nose is. And so we need to get that nitric oxide so we can get that exchange, the CO2 exchange to oxygen, so that the body can carry the oxygen through our blood. So absolutely. So I'm like, I think we should actually pause and give people the opportunity, because I think a lot of people are breathing probably too fast right now. So even if you're sitting in a car, you can do it with us. So what we're going to do is we'll just do three rounds. Okay. We're going to do three rounds. We'll do box breathing because my dad likes that one. That's fine. That's cool. We can do that. So I'm just going to cue you. Okay. And so I'm just say inhale, 2, 3, 4, and then we're going to hold, and then we're going to exhale, and then we're going to hold. And so the hold is the important part. So I just want to add on, the hold is the important part, because that is where we want to build up that CO2 tolerance that my dad's talking about. So if you are not familiar with the breath oxygen level test, I recommend that. Actually, should we do that, Dad? Should we find out what people's breath oxygen level test is? Let's do that. Why not? Because I think it's a good check-in. Yeah, and if you're not familiar what it is, basically this test is a way to test how much CO2 tolerance you have. So what we're going to do is you're going to inhale your breath. You're going to inhale and then exhale. And then you're going to hold your breath, but it's not a breath hold test. What we're going to do is you're going to hold your breath until you feel an air hunger. You feel the urge to breathe. So if you feel that little tickle in your throat, or, you know, like you got to swallow, or you feel a little bit uncomfortable in the tummy, that is when your time is up. Okay. So I'm going to do it for 40 seconds. And the reason it's 40 seconds is because that's the optimal amount of time that you want to be able to do this. So you're going to hear maybe I'll try to edit some music in here if I can while you're doing this. But the idea is optimal is 40 seconds and up. So we're going to set that timer for you so that you can test it. If you don't get to that time, that's okay. This is just a reminder and a helpful cue that this is something that you should be working on a little bit more, because we want to build that up. Okay. I want everybody to do right now is go ahead and inhale, exhale, and hold. Five more seconds. 4, 3, 2, 1. And that's your 40 seconds. Well done. So if you were not able to make it that long, I didn't. I made it to 30 seconds. Again, something to keep working on. An okay score is between 18 or 20 seconds and up. So if you're between 18 and 40, then that's commendable, but something to keep working on. If you're below the 20 second mark, I highly, highly, highly recommend that you start practicing the 100 deep breaths from the brain protocol, or just practicing the box breathing that we're going to do right now. Okay. So what we're going to do is I'm going to cue you on your time. We're just going to do 3 cycles just to slow down your breathing. All right. Go ahead and inhale, breathe in. 2, 3, 4, hold. 2, 3, 4, release. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, inhale. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, inhale. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, keep going. Inhale. 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, 3, 4, exhale. 1, 2, 3, 4, hold. 1, 2, three, and four. Good. That's like a minute's worth of breathing. How's that? That to me is fast. That's like, that felt really fast. I don't know about you. And if not, then that's okay. But I guess that's what I practice breathing. But the idea is that, you know, like you want to just start practicing, be more mindful of what your breathing is, you know. So if you're not sure, the other test you can do is just put a timer on for 1 minute and count how many breaths. Inhale, exhale is one breath. That's what my dad's talking about. 5.5 is the ideal amount of breaths in a minute. And a lot of us, we're just really not doing that, unfortunately. Yeah. So that was fun.
And the idea is that over time, you will be able to train your brain to not have to consciously be thinking about it. And you will just start unconsciously doing that because the nervous system and the brain says, oh, we don't have to breathe as much because we're good. And then when you're comfortable with four, then make it five. And then when that gets comfortable, make it six. So just increase the number as you're comfortable doing that. And that's, you know, obviously one of the ways to help lower air quality as time goes on is going to be an important component. The other, and so I mentioned the trees. And so that's why we say getting outside is important. And if you can get outside around some type of vegetation, as opposed to living in the desert like I live in, but we do have parks and we do have green, we do have trees, et cetera, et cetera. That's an important a component of things. And it is nice to see that at least the U.S. government is some level of acknowledgement that trees are being the lungs of the earth. And they've always said that the Amazon rainforest makes 20% of the oxygen in the world. So, and as you know, they're cutting down the Amazon rainforest economically, which is another reason everybody else is starting to replant trees, because, you know, we're going to lose some of that filtration. The ability that comes with it.
Hasn't it been on fire for like decades?
Well, it always will be. There always will be fires because of that's, you know, that's thunderstorms.
Just the reality.
It's right. The reality. You know, the other things that people don't realize also in Arizona, when you just, you know, you're used to thunderstorms by getting rain. Well, we have what's called dry light. And I don't know if it was last year or 2 years ago, there was 2 million lightning strikes in Arizona. Already what? This year, there's been over 500,000 lightning strikes, and it hasn't rained.
Oh,
it's the heat. It's
right.
They call it dry lightning. So we have quite a few fires burning presently in Arizona, as we always do. And this is weeks ago. We're already over 500 fires, and we probably are near 1,000 fires now. Some of them might be only 10 acres, but some of them are hundreds and hundreds of acres in one. Weeks ago was just west of Scottsdale, literally coming to a person's back door. They use the airplanes to drop the spray retardant, hoping that the houses wouldn't burn down. And I, other than some sheds and that kind of stuff, there were no houses that I think burned, but they burned hundreds and hundreds of acres. Some of these fires, unfortunately, are human caused, but many of the fires in this state are lightning, dry lightning caused. And it happens routinely. You don't hear about it because, you know,
it just happens too often.
It just happens all the time. They're always fighting fires in the state, is the reality.
And that's scary too. And I know, like, I was talking to a friend of mine, like, that's scary because you can't really, like, where do you go when there's a fire? Like, it's a scary reality. Like, there's a house about five or six houses down from me. It caught fire from, you know what it was? It was a car battery. Got caught. It blew up. It was one of the Amazon. What are the whatever fake? Yeah, the fake battery. It wasn't like a stock from anyway. So it was one of the. It was a battery. It got overheated in the garage, and the garage just blew out two cars, and the whole house. And it was gone in minutes. And it's crazy, like how much damage it can cause. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's like the fear. And then, so it's like, we talk about like climate change, the fear, the emotions that come up when we talk about, you know, these things are somewhat, I'm like, right now, I feel like I need to go plant like a zillion trees. I'm like, okay. I'm like, how do I do that? How can I go help support planting more trees? But there's some emotions that come along with that. Just before you keep going, the one thing I want to add on for the breathing part is something that I'm noticing a lot too for people with breathing is that they tend to breathe very shallow and into their chest. So if you are going to practice breathing, I highly recommend that you either use your hands and hold your lower ribs when you're doing it, or put like a scarf or something around your lower abdomen or your lower ribs to get your brain to breathe lower and deeper. Okay. Cause I think that's the thing is I'm seeing is a lot of people just have a really hard time getting a deep breath. And when you use pressure and when you use that sensory input of, oh, I need to breathe down here, it may help you a little bit. So I just want to add that because that's something that I'm seeing quite a bit now, that people are very shallow and fast breathing. So we want to breathe light and deep. So anyway, okay, keep going, Dad. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Another point as far as the aspect of the lithium batteries and with electric cars becoming part of science and save the environment, less fossil fuel, that kind of thing. Just on the other side of this, that's a problem. It's a few months ago now, but there was a Tesla that caught fire on a freeway, and I don't know the temperature, but it's ridiculous. But I know they said in order to put out the fire, it took 50,000 gallons of water to put out a single car fire because it burned so hot that water couldn't even put the fire out. They just had to keep drenching it and drenching it and drenching it and drenching it because it was so hot. So yes, this is an accident. It's unfortunate, but this is also something that, you know, we think is a positive. And we can't, you know, say, well, we can't do electric cars simply because, you know, this type of thing. But we also have to look at water resources. We know that our water supply is, which is another critical component of the basic treatment guidelines. What do we need to do for ourselves to adjust that? Obviously, you know, living in Arizona in the middle of the summer, it's no longer half your body weight, you know, in ounces as your requirement, because if you go outside, even walking at the 5 in the morning for me is an opportunity that, you know, I'm sweating. It's 98 degrees, so no wonder you're sweating. But I immediately will come back in and drink a good 20 ounces of water simply because I've been walking for 45 minutes. And, you know, so the amount of water, clean water that's required on an everyday basis with climate change is going up. Fortunately, we still see a frigging lot of water in plastic bottles, which is another problem. So we need to start using, you know, aluminum, stainless steel, refillable containers. Try to get away from just buying plastic water bottles. Obviously, in your home, you can get a filtering system, whether it's a whole home filtering system or an under the sink filtering system, some type of thing that more so than just turning the tap on. You know, when you turn the tap on, we don't really need all the chlorine that's in that water. It's necessary through the public health system because it keeps the bacteria count under control in general. But once it leaves the tap, you hopefully it's coming through some type of a filter. So looking at water quality, the amount of water has to, and our requirement potentially will change, certainly changes in the summertime. Remember, you never want to get thirsty, because if you're thirsty, it already means you're down a pint. About 3%, you're about 3% dehydrated. The first sign of dehydration is not thirst. The first sign of dehydration is brain fog. I can't think. I can't focus. I'm forgetting things. And that's almost a universal complaint now for many of my patients, because they're all worried about, oh, am I developing cognitive decline? I have early stage Alzheimer's? I said, no, you're probably just dehydrated. At least your brain is dehydrated, knowing that our brain is 80% water. So we not only need to hydrate all our organs, but we need to massively need to make sure our brain is well hydrated, you know, following the rules that we have talked about previously as a BTG. So, you know, water and air, absolutely critical to life. The other aspect of water that is now becoming more prevalent, the way that the polar caps are melting, they're saying that even if the ocean goes up 3 or 4 inches, which doesn't sound very much, but that's a hell of a lot of water since the oceans cover a good part of the Earth. It's going to put something like 40% of the Earth's population who live along all coastlines underwater.
40%?
Apparently, because there's so many of the population. Lord, look in this country. Look at Louisiana. It's already underwater, below sea level. Look at Miami. It's already pretty much below sea level. Look at the Netherlands. Something like 40% of the Netherlands is already reclaimed. And so what do they have? They're going to have to build higher dikes. So, I mean, obviously governments are thinking about this, but there's a massive amount of the population shift. There's an island in the Caribbean. I don't remember which country it is, maybe Costa Rica, where they literally have moved people who've lived there for centuries off the island because the island is basically now going to be underwater within a decade. So the entire lifestyle of this, and I'll call it a native community, have been moved into, for lack of a better term, row housing. Their entire livelihood was fishing and water. Now they don't even live near the water because their entire environment of where they're living is going to be underwater. And so they're rebuilding. This is now the, you start looking at these types of things that people are trying to stay ahead of. And there's some city in Southeast Asia that they literally moved. They're moving the entire city because it's sinking. So these are the reality of the day with the polar ice caps melting. And the fact is that, you know, we're, as I said before, we have had most recently the 3 hottest days ever recorded on the planet globally. And it's, you know, even if it's a tenth of a degree, it only needs to go up a couple of degrees, the average temperature. And just another thing, I just thought, you hear about the summer, at least in the United States, we hear about all the shark attacks. There's so many more shark attacks. And why? Because the water is so much warmer now that the sharks are moving farther and farther north. You hear about the shores of New Jersey, the shores of New York. It's like, why are we getting shark attacks now? Because the water is warm and they're having to look for cooler water because it's uncomfortable for that to do. You look at reptiles and alligators, when the water gets too hot, they are going to have difficulty reproducing. Wildlife, vegetation, everything is changing. It's not just about how we need to cope, but we need to realize the entire world is having to cope differently. More and more areas of drought, like we're in right now in Arizona, but it's not just here. It's, you know, we're talking around the world. And you look at places in Africa that, you know, are obviously, and when you don't have high quality water, you have no ability to grow crops. You have no ability to nourish your own body. So these are some of the obvious type things. So how can we not overemphasize your readiness and willingness and necessity to keep doing the absolute necessities, learning how to breathe efficiently, making sure that you are properly well hydrated, making sure that you are having the preferred food choices. An incredibly scary thought is the fact that you can now, it's been approved by the FDA. I don't know if it's in stores yet. Meat that's in it, that's made literally like a 3D print. It has nothing to do with a cow. It has nothing to do with a pig. It has nothing to do with a chicken. You can literally buy so-called meat that has never seen an animal, never come from an animal. And so the whole idea is, well, animals, cows are, you know, produce a lot of methane gas, a lot of manure, and that's affecting our ozone layer, et cetera. But they're saying is that this artificial making of this food, which we have no idea. You just know that makes no common sense. We know epigenetically that is not how our cells are supposed to be fed.
Yeah, your cells are going to generate something.
You know, it's like, this is not progress. This is not something that we should be thinking about. And the idea of science and somehow feeding a world population, we're going to be wiping out a lot of the population with other types of catastrophic illness because we have no concept of how epigenetically our cells, our genes could possibly respond normally to this type of activity.
That's just, I'm just like, my mind's like reeling on that. What? Yeah. I mean, it sounds catastrophic at the end of the day, but there's things that we can do, right? So it's like, it makes me want to go get a plot of land and just start growing my own food. And yeah, I'm going to keep going. I'm going to have to get my own farm. It's just going to grow beyond bunnies. I have to get a cow now. And good times. Good times.
Well, the other thing is we know that the amount of farmland in the United States and Canada is decreasing. Sure, it's decreasing. I mean, farmers are having a harder and harder time. And, you know, how are they growing their crops with, Roundup and all that stuff? And we're killing the soil. We've killed the bugs. There's not even earthworms in a lot of soil nowadays because of glycosides, which are in the food supply. It's in the ground. You can't get away from it. So obviously, you know, organic farming, which is in truth, it's difficult because it's hard to find plots of land that haven't literally been touched by spraying. And not only maybe your land wasn't sprayed, but even if a farmer is organic, across the fence, the next farmer is saying, what the hell with that organic stuff? I'm just going to spray all this pesticide stuff to kill all the bugs so I can grow a crop. That is affecting our epigenetics. That is affecting our genes. That is also part of climate change with the bugs that we just talked about. You know, it's one thing to have mosquitoes and black flies and ticks, but think of all the bugs that are eating forests, that are eating corn crops, that are eating soy crops, that are eating wheat crops, et cetera, because they're becoming more resistant to all these sprays and things that are done. So they're becoming super bugs. You know, hear about the bees, or, you know, the bees are disappearing mm-hmm. as far as pollination is concerned. All these, you know, the it's a snowball. It's one thing. So we have to do our own little part. And we say, well, what can we do? Well, you can look after yourself for one. You can, you know, utilize, you know, resources as minimal as possible to be effective. So, you know, that's the kind of thing that the idea of us doing this podcast is simply that, oh yeah, I know about that, but maybe I do have to pay more attention to it. Maybe I do have to be more mindful. Please recycle things. Please just don't throw everything in the landfill and expect some way that 100 years from now it will degenerate. Do your best to buy reusable resources, that type of thing, because the climate change is going to make this stuff more and more difficult to be able to survive on this earth.
Actually, something that I saw, I don't know where I saw this, but they were talking about like plastic bottles, don't recycle them because it actually costs more money and is more damage to the earth, that you should actually just throw away your plastic bottles because recycle, they'll just end up in the ocean anyway. So throw away your plastic bottles, throw them away, put it in the garbage. Don't put it in the recycling. Like, that's all I wanted to add. Maybe somebody can comment to that, but yeah, it doesn't help. It doesn't get recycled because it actually causes more damage to the earth.
It's very unfortunate that we live in a very don't fix anything anymore. It's almost like something breaks, throw it out and get a new one.
Right.
So, you know, we moved away as society. And if something broke, you would, like in the old days, no matter what it was, if it was an appliance, somebody would come and fix it. You know, whether it was your vacuum cleaner or your refrigerator or your television. It's like, it was repairable. Now, no, we don't repair. Like your computer. It's like, yeah, you can do some hard stuff. But so I get a new computer. It's out of date after 3 or 5 years. It's like, and all those precious metals and all that stuff in there. It's like, the stuff is really essential to the earth. And just yesterday, there was a thing here in Arizona, and I don't know if it's going to pass, but it made the news that the federal government is trying to annex something, thousands of acres in northern Arizona, which unfortunately always involves Native American treaty land. And they said, well, it's a very rich source of uranium. It's like, really? Is that why you're doing it? Or are you doing it because of trying to do conservation? Who knows? Something right. Political is like, you know, maybe there's always an underlying ask. Maybe they have good intentions. But the idea is they're annexing people's private property, so to speak, in the sake of some type of survival or something or other. So just don't put your head in the sand. Don't think that there isn't anything that you can do individually. There's always things you can do individually. And so just think about things, hopefully change your focus. We're not here because we're experts in any of this type of information. We're just here because we're having a little chat and a conversation to try and help you make one step further in a positive way. And, that hopefully can influence your kids, your grandkids, that they will ultimately have a planet on which to live 50 years from now, which obviously will be the goal, one of the goals.
You said it. It's like, it's not doom and gloom, but there's definitely things that you can do today to take your power back, take your health under control. And one thing I'm going to say for water, though, do you recommend water filtration systems then?
Well, there's a variety of them. And so yeah. A lot of it becomes economical. Even the most inexpensive, a Brita filter, which is better than none. Right. So you can go to that. You can go to systems that are tens of thousands of dollars, which won't be economically feasible for most people. But is there a specific brand? No, because, somebody said, well, this one's better, or that one's better. All I'm saying is, please don't drink water out of the tap without some form of filter, even if it's a Brita filter, and then sit it in your refrigerator. Reverse osmosis is a system, but takes a hell of a lot of water to filter the water. So, simply something as simple as a Berkey with a filtration system, it's not efficient for the whole system in general, but it can filter a couple of gallons, probably a day, but you have to keep adding water to it. So it's a little cumbersome, but it's not that expensive, a few hundred dollars. And certainly in a household, if that's affordable, and all your water for cooking and drinking and things could literally come out of that. On a really hot day, you're probably going to run out of water because people are drinking more. But, you have those simplest systems to really expensive systems. So I would say do some research, do what your economics allows you to afford, knowing that water is going to be one of the ways that you can help yourself as we continue to combat climate change.
Awesome. That's great. That's always a question that comes up that I always get asked, because I posted something about water on social media. And so then I had all the people about talking about the molecules of the water and how it affects your brain. And there's a lot of people that are big Kangen water fans, yeah. And it is a fantastic water. I'm like, I am a self-proclaimed, I am a water snob. I can taste the difference. And so just filtered out of my fridge. I don't like the taste at water in restaurants. It's like, I'm picky, and it's because I can taste it. And that's just me. So that's where I'm a bit pickier, but a Berkey is definitely something that is affordable, or even a Brita doesn't do it for me. So I'm more of I'm Berkey and Kangen, but I haven't invested in a Kangen water system. Maybe because I have you in my ear. That's for a different podcast. But anyway, thank you so much for sharing all that info, Dad. Appreciate it. And thank you all for being here and listening to us. So stay tuned for our next podcast, and we're going to talk about how stress is impacting your day-to-day behaviors and interactions with the world. So thanks so much for supporting us. Thanks so much for being here and taking a proactive step to living a better life. And we'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon.
We want to remind you that knowledge isn't power. Applied knowledge is power, where knowledge turns to experience. We encourage you to implement the information shared, allowing you to shift your health and energy. And if this is your first time listening, we truly appreciate you being here and would love to have your support by subscribing to our channel. We also love hearing from you, so please connect with us and share your thoughts. And if you have any ideas for future podcasts, please let us know. If you're interested in learning more about biological medicine or trauma-informed movement, check out the show notes. Thanks again for listening, and we look forward to connecting with you in the future.